Good morning, everyone. It is such a pleasure to be speaking to you this morning. And thank you, Tim, for his invitation. What a level of trust that man has. He met me for 10 minutes the other week, and he's asked me to preach in his church. Wow, what a man of God and what a man of faith he is. So, my name is Gavin, and I'm married to Lucinda, and we have two children, Samuel, age 13, and Hope, aged 11. And we live on St. Barnabas Road, near the station, and we go to St. Barnabas Church. So now I know a few people. It's nice to reacquaint myself with Mark and Sharon, who I knew a number of years ago through a different work. I get a great sense of family from this church, which is great, and it's lovely to step into this situation. What's funny, I think, is to hear us complaining about the heat when we've got visitors from Delhi going, what are they talking about? But it's nice to have some warmth, though, at the moment. So thank you so much for having me. So, I'm speaking this morning from the parable of the Good Samaritan. And the name of my talk is Equipped to Serve. Now, the Good Samaritan is very much my set text, given the work which I felt called to do in Cambridge. I find it a fascinating, multi-layered parable, which always feels fresh to me. And indeed, as I was contemplating it before talking to you this morning, a new aspect of it came to light. It's always spoken to me very strongly as it gets to the heart of what it is to walk as a Christian. So Jesus is nobbled by a man who might fit well in Cambridge. He's a young lawyer. This busy man is wanting the mission statement, the crux of what all this teaching is all about. He seems to be a man in a hurry. What is the most important thing? What is the absolute heart of your teaching, Jesus? Like any good leader or an alpha course, Jesus turns the question back to the questioner. Well, what do you reckon? In fact, I found out on Friday that Jesus asked 307 questions. He was asked 183 questions, of which he only answered 3. But he did, in fact, answer all the questions in the end, didn't he? So the clever lawyer knows his stuff, and he answers well. But not just content with that, and probably like most of us, he wants to know what this looks like in practice. He wants application. He has the theory, and he wants to know the practice. What does this look like, really, Jesus? And Jesus sets out the teaching in practical terms. This is what it looks like. But in doing so, he helpfully tells us what it doesn't look like as well. I sometimes, when looking at this passage, do this Bible study as a role play, getting people to act it out. I was once a prep school teacher, and so this always seemed to be a really good way of getting into the story. I'll let you off that this morning, but I do expect a small amount of audience participation in the form of simple answers. I usually stop the action. Instead, so while Jeff would have been reading it, I'd have stopped the action at certain moments and asked, what do you think was going through the minds of the participants at any one moment? Therefore, I'll ask you this morning, what do you think was going through the minds of the priest and the Levite as they observed the scene and passed by on the other side? What could be the reasons behind their actions? What held them back from helping? Why did they seemingly ignore need? Moment's thought, then I actually want your answers. What is going through their minds as they go past on the other side? Yes. Yeah, he didn't want to know. He needs to stay rich or you clean, helping somebody. They've given themselves some rules around that, haven't they? And therefore, he can't step out of that role, that presentation, however he is. And it doesn't fit in with his lifestyle in a way, does it? Good. Nice one. Another one.
Why
Yes.
I understand you. It's quite a common way of robbing somebody to be hurt.
Yes. So, the fear of a trick. Somehow, it was a dangerous road. There was a fear of a trick on that road, certainly. Nice one. Thank you. Yes, sir. Busyness, the Cambridge disease. Yes, well done. Busyness. Yes, another one. Yes, Sharon.
The priest might have thought what he was going to do was more important.
Yes, it's beneath me, isn't it? It's beneath me. That's not what I do. It's beneath me. Okay, yes, that's a good one. Any more for any more? Yes, sir, at the back. I'm not touching that. Yes, there was a cultural difference, wasn't there? I'm not touching that. Yes, exactly. He's not my neighbour. He's not part of my problem. Yeah, nice one. Thank you. Any more? I think we pretty much covered it. I don't want to get involved. I won't make a difference. What difference would I make in that? I'm not a first aider. I haven't got the necessary skills. I haven't got time. It's their own fault. It's their own fault. They shouldn't have travelled on that road anyway. Notoriously difficult, notoriously dangerous. Their own fault. Fear of a trick, or I can't be bothered. Okay? All of those were going through the priest and the Levite, their head, as they passed by on the other side. So it was while I was preparing to speak to you this morning that it struck me that Jesus is entirely neutral about the priest and the Levite's actions. He doesn't say they were wrong. He doesn't say they were neighbours to the man, but he's just telling their story. And the more I go on with this passage, rather than wanting to condemn them, the priest and the Levite, as I felt like doing in the past, I've got a lot more sympathy for them. For whatever reason, they didn't or couldn't help. We can have no idea what was in their heart or mind at that moment. They may well have thought that they should help. Here is Martin Luther King commenting on this, after he visited the very area. So this is Martin Luther King. As soon as we got on that road, I said to my wife, I can see why Jesus used this as a setting for the parable. It's a winding, meandering road. In the days of Jesus, it came to be known as the Bloody Pass. And you know, it's possible that the priest and the Levite looked over that man on the ground and wondered if the robbers were still around. Or it's possible that they felt that the man on the ground was merely faking. And he was acting like he'd been robbed and hurt in order to seize them over there, lure them there for a quick and easy seizure. So the first question that the priest asked, the first question that the Levite asked was, if I stop to help this man, what will happen to me? So that's the end of Martin Luther King's quote. Their reactions were understandable. Their own situations took priority over the immediate need they witnessed. They may have had great problems of their own. They weren't in a position to help. Or they were rushing to help somebody else, something more important, as we said. They may not have been the hard-hearted people that I have tended to see them as. And one of the reasons might have been, as we have mentioned, that they just didn't feel able in that instant to serve. They just didn't feel equipped. But of course, the Good Samaritan, in his response, is one which totally eclipses them. It's in sharp contrast to those that their contemporary society may have been expected to help. The Good Samaritan's response was extraordinary for a whole host of reasons. The response to the Good Samaritan helps us to understand the breadth and depth of God's love. It's an extravagant response of love in action. It is precise, it's exactly what the guy needs, it's realistic because it's doable, and it's personal because it demands something of the giver. The Good Samaritan proved himself to be adaptable. He gave something precious, oil and wine, and he didn't mind the consequences. But, and this is an important but, he didn't take on the guy's long-term care. He knew there was somebody much better placed to help, with better resources and experience. And this has struck a chord with me as I try to work out the responsibility, the extent of my responsibility to those in need. How can others help too? Do we know the innkeepers? I'm not going to take on all this person's needs. Why should I? Here's a really good summary of the nature of the Good Samaritan's response. And I don't know who this lady is, but she's got the hit the nail on the head. Her name is Elmira Nzombi, and she's from the United Methodist Church. I came across this a few years ago. God's understanding of neighbour does not have boundaries or hierarchies. We can't choose as neighbours those with whom we are most comfortable. Being a neighbour is not a comfortable act of charity. We bring all that we are, our histories and prejudices, to the task of being neighbours. Can we, like this Samaritan, offer a witness of action that speaks of God's love? It is God's love that makes it possible for us to break the rules and to follow the Samaritan's extravagant example. So it is this story and other probably very familiar passages in the Bible, like the one that, from Isaiah that Tim mentioned this morning, that inspires me to do what I do in this city. If I may, I'll just tell you my story a little, which is also the story of starting this work in Cambridge. So, you'll recognise that scene probably. I arrived in Cambridge nearly 20 years ago to work at King's College Prep School, looking after the choristers at King's College. The little boys with their top hats and their gowns and their Harry Hill collars traipsing over to chapel. And my job, part of my job, was looking after these very privileged, badly behaved children. And that's when I arrived in the city. But I lived in the boarding house at the time, and I wanted to find a church. And I started going to St. Barnabas Church. And I bought a house nearby. I didn't realise it at the time. But started looking at a house, and I bought the house, and it was near the church. Anyway, and our church started, so I was living in the boarding house most of the week, and then my church at the weekends started doing work with street people. So we started laying on a lunch for street people. And we'd open the door Saturday lunchtime, and all these guys and girls would come in with their dogs on strings and their cans of special brew. And I was 32 before I met anybody on the streets. I hadn't spoken to, engaged with anybody on the streets. A bit like John and the age that he got to before he really had his heart broken for Russia. You know, I hadn't actually engaged with it and been exposed to it until the age of 32. And so at one of these lunches, a fight broke out outside. So between these two guys, they're a bit drunk, and it was quite easy for me and this guy called Steve to break the fight up. One of the protagonists disappeared, and the other one, whose name turned out to be Neil, came into the church building with us. We sat him down, gave him a cup of tea, and he told me his life story. And in 2 minutes, he'd gone from fighting to crying. And having told me his life story, I just thought, wow, if that were me, I'd be exactly like you. There, but for the grace of God, go I. So I didn't see myself as any different from Neil. And then bizarrely, that was the Saturday, and then bizarrely, it was my job every Thursday afternoon to take the kids up to chapel. And we were walking in the croc, so two by two, up West Road, across Queen's Road, through the back gate of King's, and we walked up the path towards the chapel at King's, and there's a little bridge over the Cam at that point, and standing on that bridge was my friend Neil from the previous Saturday. And the choristers carry on walking. I was like, oh, Neil, mate, hugging each other. And then I had to, because they're conditioned to just carry on walking. And then I had to, Neil, I've got to go. Sorry, mate, I'm looking after these kids. So I ran on after the choristers. And one of the choristers said to me, who's that? He goes, who's that Howie? Because my nickname was Howie. And I said, it was my friend Neil. I met him on Saturday. And I had this moment of massive culture clash of choristers and homeless people, like, what's going on? Amazing. And it was that moment that changed my life, actually, because my two worlds collided. I thought, how can I look after these kids when that exists? How can I help to look after the Neils of this world? I've got to do something about that. I had this moment. There's a Bill Hybels book called Holy Discontent. And it talks about a Popeye moment. Now, you kids there, you wouldn't know who Popeye is, probably. But anyway, so he's Popeye, he just goes, I just can't take it anymore. And he takes the spinach and everything kicks off. And I had this Popeye moment, like, what now, Lord? It's a bit like John's heart being stirred up for Russia. It's like, what do I do with this? So I had the feeling I wanted to serve God full time, but I didn't know what that looked like. I knew I couldn't stay as a prep school teacher, lovely though it was, and I enjoyed it. I really, loved it. But as an Anglican, I'm in an Anglican church, so I thought there must only be two roads available to me to do this, either vicar or missionary. But I discovered after searching for a few months that I was being called to serve in a totally different way. Now, before I say anything else, I need to warn you that I'll be speaking in very broad terms for the next minute or so. There are generalizations that I'm going to speak in, and there are many ways in which you could say, yeah, but, and don't let me get away with anything, and come and talk to me afterwards. So here we go. At the beginning of the 20th century, the church in this country was stuck into social problems, and largely responsible for meeting these head on. But for one reason or another, where once the church had been the Good Samaritan when it came to no end of social need, it became largely isolated from it. Those functions which the church had traditionally had the means and resources and knowledge to perform had gone away from us. With some exceptions, such as the Salvation Army, the church in this country has had that function taken away or it's given it up. Many Christ-inspired organisations have blossomed and flourished for a generation or two, but gradually become watered down, secularised, and delivering government programmes. Oxfam, Shelter, Samaritans, Centrepoint, and so on, have moved away from their church roots, and traditional almshouses clustered around the church have become subsumed into yet another profitable housing association. So the church had become more like the priest and the Levite. With a number of exceptions, which you can tell me about afterwards, such as the fair chunk of education provision, the church was no longer the go-to organisation for social need. In all this time, I don't believe that the church lacked the desire or the conviction to carry out these tasks. And this is where I've become far more compassionate towards the priest and the Levite. But a whole host of forces and shifts meant that the church has had its tools blunted and taken out of its hands. And what is interesting is that every generation or so, some great work springs up. And locally, Jimmy's Night Shelter rose up to be the organisation for homelessness. But even though it's barely a generation old, it has shifted from its distinctly church root, despite being located in a church basement and having some Christian leaders. So this is the area I felt called to. I was dealing with this conundrum. There are so many in the church who want to give, but how can they be equipped to serve effectively? I came across this organisation called Besom, and I felt a strong call to set one up in the city. And through a whole series of God-inspired coincidences, which I haven't quite the time to tell you about, this came into being. So what is the Besom? Good question. It's a funny name. Sorry about the name. It's the nickname. Besom is, more senior members of the congregation will tell you, a Besom is a broom made out of twigs, traditional handmade broom. And it was the nickname of the guy who started it. It was his vision. When he was a child, he was always sweeping up after his family. And so they nicknamed him Besom. Strange name. But anyway, I'll tell you a few things about what it is. The Besom vision, it's aimed at the church to help the church meet need. It's aimed at the church to help the church meet need. It's not aimed at need. It's aimed at the church to help the church meet need. Okay? It helps people to give. People give in many different ways. People give through their Besom, which we have one in Cambridge, and we have one in Histon as well, if you're up in Histon. It enables people to give their things, their time and their money. So if you give your thing, so if you've got really good quality items to give away, none of your toot, please. Because we want people to give their best. Because you love your neighbour as yourself. You don't give the rubbish. You're not trying to get rid of anything. You want to give good quality items to people who otherwise don't have any choice. Okay? So we accept really good quality items, sofas, fridges, blah, 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 blah. And we give them away for free to people. We're the only organisation in Cambridge that never charges poor people for anything they do. Emmaus sometimes charge, largely charge, in fact. So if you have good quality items you want to bless people with, not to get rid of, bless people with, please contact us. So they give their things. So if people coming out of homeless hostels, moving into their own flats, we make up starter packs, kitchen packs, kitchen items, crockery, cutlery, all that stuff. If you have that kind of items, we're here for you to give that. Other things as well, baby bundles. You can't quite see these bedding bundles, duvets and pillows, etc., etc. Baby bundles as well. If a single mum is expecting a baby, we really bless her with a whole baby bath full of items for a single mum or a new mum. And at Christmas time, I know, pardon me, you guys have been giving Christmas hampers, which is wonderful. So a number of your groups have done Christmas hampers before now. If we bless somebody that year, we bless them with a hamper at the end of the year, again, provided by the local church. And this is where Alison Brock comes in. Yeah, I don't want to embarrass you, Alison. So Alison helps, Alison works at the warehouse during the week as well. I don't know how she finds the time, but she does. So she's one of the people who comes into the warehouse during the week to help things run. She doesn't run the van, but she's there at the... she's one of the people who helps organise everything, and she's very, very brilliant at that, and I appreciate her enormously. Because she organises the van, so the van goes out and collects furniture, but we also organise teams to come and bless people in their homes. We find out where need is in the local area, in Cambridge, and we help people give specifically to that need. So it's gardening, decorating, and various DIY jobs and things like that. And we organise... We've probably done about 40 or so plus so far this year, organising student groups and home groups and church groups to come and bless people with a few hours of their time. It's only a few hours of time. I know we're all money rich and time poor, but it's only a few hours of your time per annum, perhaps. Even if every home group from every church in this city did one project a year, that is radical social transformation. Radical social transformation. If every home group from every church did one project a year, that's radical social transformation. So that's that. And people give us money so we can run, so we can operate, so we can afford, none of us is paid, we're all volunteers, and we just need to operate the van and we need to run the warehouse and anything extra on that. On top of that, we buy fridges and washing machines, and it's fabulous. So, but we never have any extra money. Anyway, we might after the collection, so thank you, Tim. One little story. It makes a massive difference to somebody's home. Here's a photo of a kitchen that was burnt out during a chip pan fire, I think it was. This is a lady in Trumpington, a single mum with three kids, and she had a chip pan fire, and the kitchen was absolutely horrid in there, because there was, as you can see from the photo, just about... There was smoke all over the ceiling, and it was really horrible. So we had a student group, I think it was, went in, and they made a massive difference, as you can imagine. That's a huge difference for her. And I can't underestimate just how much difference. You might just think, I'm rocking up, the kit's already all there, and I just cut back lots of hedges and mow the lawn. You can't overestimate how much difference that makes in somebody's life when somebody is blessed like that. Just for a few hours of your time, huge difference, huge difference. Whenever I speak about this to church groups, it's not that there's a lack of conviction and desire to serve those in need, but there's a lack of knowledge as how to serve effectively. There is a strong sense of, I want to serve, but I don't quite know where to start. So I started this organisation in 2006. And since then, there have sprung up a number of organisations which also can equip the churches to serve. The difference between previous organisations, which are focused on the need, and now, is that many of this new generation of organisations are primarily about serving the local church to help them to engage with a certain type of need. So locally we have BISM, we have Hope into Action, which is a housing charity which runs 8 houses, all in conjunction with the local church. We have CAP, Christians Against Poverty, helping the church to help people in debt. And CCHP, the Cambridge Church's Homeless Project, organising the churches to respond to immediate homelessness need in the winter. So, in conclusion, thank goodness, this wonderful parable has a broader meaning, I think, than the one I've previously given it. All three of the passers-by illustrate how the kingdom works. There are those who just can, and there are those that just can't. BISM is here for those with the desire to serve and to equip them to serve effectively in this city. Jesus sets out clearly that engagement with those in need around you is part and parcel of a Christian's walk. And I imagine that many of you are already engaged with certain need in your midst. And you certainly, at St Andrew Street Baptist, you certainly have the homeless on your doorstep a lot of the time. But if you feel that you want to be equipped further, do be in touch or chat to me afterwards. Thank you very much for having me.